Welcome back, everyone. This is Eric Elveson for the Digital Education Podcast. I'm blessed today to be connected with friends in the UK. And amidst all of the busyness of life there and the changes, I'm in the morning here on the West Coast and they're in the evening. So thank you. I'm with Andy Wolf, who is Deep Deputy Chief Education Officer. Correct, Andy?
That is correct.
You and I did a podcast earlier about 4 or 5 months ago, and it was about leadership and leadership development and the practices of ethos-enhancing practices. And I look forward to asking you a few questions on that. But I'm also with Andy's boss, Nigel Genders, who's the Chief Executive Officer of the Church of England Schools. And he's been that for 4.5 years. So, Nigel, thank you for joining us for this podcast this time.
It's great to be with you.
And so, Nigel, I want to start with you and ask the question of, in this, you've been the CEO for 4.5 years. Where did the vision for the Church of England Schools come from, or how did it develop that said, you know what, we need to really invest in leadership development to, you know, improve the quality of our schools, but then just create the better outcomes for our students?
Sure. And of course, yeah, the Church of England's been involved in education for many, many years before I got involved. So the fact that, you know, as an organization, we've been at the heart of education in this country for over 200 years, we've been really good over that time about talking about what we do in education and the huge stake that we've got in education. And what I tried to do when I took up this role was to shift the language away from what we do to why we do it. And so getting a sense of what our vision for education is that would then drive the way that we went about doing it and how we did it, rather than just assuming that people knew that because we've been around for 200 or so years running education in this country, we'd always be doing the same. So there was a deliberate shift to think about why and what our vision for education was. And in that, there was a particular nuance which is really important from the English perspective, and that is that we have a lot of Church of England schools. So the way education works in England is that the church has this huge stake in education. There are 4,700 schools educating 1 million children in Church of England schools, all funded by the state. And we wanted to be really clear that what we were seeking to produce was a vision for education, for why we're involved in education, which wasn't just about our schools, but was offering something richer and broader to the whole nation. So our strapline is that it's an education that's deeply Christian, serving the common good. And we wanted to make sure that it was done in a way which was ensuring that the sense of our vision for education was something which was there for the whole country. But recognizing that within the church sector, within our own schools, all of those schools, we needed to have particular kind of emphasis on, therefore, how do we train the kind of leaders that we need to be able to deliver that kind of education? Because it's all very well and good having a fantastic vision for education, but if you haven't got the leaders that you need who are equipped to both understand that vision and to lead with that vision, then you're not going to get anywhere. And so alongside doing our vision for education, we developed our Foundation for Educational Leadership, which was to say, look, the thing that we can do to make the biggest difference in education is to equip leaders who share that vision for education. We did think about starting with a very different program and thought about doing teacher training, which the church has quite a long track record of being involved in that over the years. But when we tested the kind of the concepts, we discovered that actually it's the leader in the school who really sets the tone. It's the leader who makes the difference in terms of the whole ethos and character of the school. And so we wanted a kind of a program which would seek to equip leaders to be able to share that vision for education, which is why we had to focus entirely there.
So let me ask this, the next question on, what's the vision for the education? You know, we look at 21st education, we have lots of conversations of the transitions from what was to what can be or what is. How much of the vision for this education, and you use the term deeply Christian, was rooted in the past and need to be re-clarified for the current situation or the future? Or how much of this is just even a revisioning for what the Church of England schools can be themselves, but what education in the UK can be overall.
Yeah, and it's so that's a really good question, because we're not saying that none of this has ever been thought of before. You know, the church has been involved in education all these years. What it's never done is write down or to articulate why it thought that it was important. So people hadn't got something which they could get behind and say, oh, that's why you're involved in education as the church. And so it was a kind of drawing together from first principles the reason that we're involved in education. And we went back to, you know, the kind of John 10:10 and Jesus's offer of life in all its fullness as the kind of the key text from which we wanted to say, okay, so if Jesus comes to bring life in all its fullness, what's the kind of education that you need in order to equip children and young people to be able to embrace and discover and find that life in all its fullness? And so we started from that fundamental starting point, saying, well, the kind of life in all its fullness that we're talking about, we then categorized in four core strands, which we said made up the kind of the ecology of what we thought education for life in all its fullness meant. And that was around wisdom, knowledge and skills as one of them, around living well together and community as another, around dignity and respect, and around hope and aspiration. And with those four core strands, we said that actually the kind of education that we need to be able to offer the young people of this nation is one which gets beyond just knowledge for knowledge's sake, but is actually equipping children and young people to have the wisdom of character to be able to live out that knowledge in a way which makes a deeply Christian impact on society. So it's kind of getting that sense of the flourishing of children and young people and how that, you know, looks and feels within the education system, and wanted to make sure that it was there both for those people in church schools, but also for the nation as a whole, to say that actually there's something in this which is, you know, deeply attractive to anybody who's looking at what education's about, because it's fundamental to what human character's about.
And Andy, you know, add some more to that, you know, as you kind of have walked alongside Nigel and have seen this unfold.
I think one of the really important things that the visions enabled us to do is have a shared language across the whole country. So a lot of my work involves running networks and programs for leaders in very different parts of the country. So over the last 2 weeks, I've run 8 or 9 different events with leaders north, south, east, west, and we're using the same language in each of them. It's language that's hospitable and inclusive. And it's not simply seeking to write rules for our club. And what that means is that because it is way more welcoming and way more invitational, but doesn't lack that deep Christian root, it means that we can have the same kind of conversation today. I'm in Manchester today running an event with schools here. Last week we were in Canterbury, the previous week in Cornwall, the previous week in Birmingham, all over the country, beginning to use the same kind of language. And the exciting thing about that is that not talking about your why, it's very easy in leadership to feel that you have to have your own personal why, you know, uniquely my vocation, my reason for being, your reason for being. Eric was slightly different, Nigel slightly different again. There's something quite powerful that happens when Church of England schools, and increasingly those that aren't Church of England schools, can identify with the same language nationally. It's not kind of like a franchise model where we're imposing a sort of really dogmatic way of approaching upon every single school, but equipping leaders to recognize that through these networks and the program, when we kind of unite around the same language, there's something that really, really comes to life because of that.
So I definitely want to ask a question about that, and maybe Nigel and then Andy, you kind of add to it, because so often in education, you know, you get this place where leadership, or, you know, upper level leadership, or yeah, I think even in just business, as I do research on business, where new leadership comes in, they impose kind of a new direction, a new vision, and they in like what you're talking about, Andy, the franchise model down. This is the new way of doing things, and then they push it out. Nigel, how did you get – maybe it's a two-part question because it's – how did you get to this place where it's like, okay, we've created, clarified, and done the visioning and created the conversation with the language. And then, Andy, how have you found it just kind of – it becomes an ownership process, you know, in that leadership kind of level at the schools?
Yeah, and one of the advantages we've got in the way the Church of England works is that doing the kind of the top-down, you know, we'll deliver something and then franchise it out and everyone must, you know, must just follow suit without asking too many questions. That would never work in our context because the Church of England operates in a way which says that there are 41 dioceses across the country. Every diocese has its own bishop, its own education team. You know, there's not a kind of command and control structure where what I say here, I keep looking around the office for the lever that I've got that I'll be able to pull and get everybody to be able to just do something. That it doesn't exist because that's not how the Church of England functions. Because it's about how we therefore generate ideas that become so contagious and attractive that people say, yeah, that's exactly what we want to do. So what we set about doing was establishing a vision through really widespread consultation as well and getting people involved in thinking about how we put that together. Fundamentally, we then had to write it and say, look, this is what we're offering. But we used language all the time, which was about, you know, this is you know, offered as a lens through which you can see your own local practice. It's not offered as a straitjacket that you must try and fit your practice into. But this is the way that we're looking at it. We got the buy-in from every bishop in the country to say, yeah, that's the kind of vision that we want. We had the General Synod, which is like the governance body of the Church of England, considered it. They endorsed it really welcomed it. And so there was a sense in the country that this was a vision which had national traction, but it wasn't being force-fed or people weren't compelled to follow it. And they were invited to use it as a lens through which to see their own practice. And what's happened, you know, 2 years on from when we published the vision is that lo and behold, you go around to individual dioceses and pretty much all of them are saying that's exactly the language we want to use. You go into a school and I've been talking to head teachers and I know Andy's been talking to head teachers and they say, you know, when we got that document, that exactly describes my school. So I want to be able to use that document as it is in a way which describes my vision for education locally. It's not because we told them they had to do that, but it was so attractive that they wanted to do it. And then the other thing that we do within our system here is that all of the church schools in the country also have an inspection framework where we assess how effective they're being as Church of England schools. And we've aligned and changed the inspection framework so that too feels much more vision-centric. So again, we're not saying, can you sign our four kind of key themes? And if you can't put those on your wall, then you won't get very good grade in your inspection. But can you articulate your Christian vision for education as a school? And as we, you know, throw that challenge out to the schools to be able to articulate their Christian vision for education, then it's no surprise that they're looking to the resource of our National Vision for Education and saying, well, you know, that's a really helpful lens through which we can see our own practice. So it's kind of not by levers and compulsion, but by offering something which is attractive as a way of articulating a vision for education.
Andy, you know, as you kind of hear Nigel talk about that, and then you work out that, and you're in schools, and I know I follow you on Twitter, and you're here, there, everywhere. I saw the work that you're doing with some of the rural schools and the initiative there to support leadership of rural schools. Like, so how have you seen, you know, this, that what Nigel just mentioned, you know, and how do you kind of go and work that out and build up the leadership capacity and just kind of be an accelerant or an amplifier to the work that they're doing?
I think having worked for many years as a school leader, one thing is for sure, the world does not need any more documents to read. You know, no school leader is just crying out for more stuff to read. But what they are crying out for is a vision of that is attractive, you know, what we're not seeing is people saying, thank you so much for writing the document for us to read. But it's equipping leaders in a time in this country, at least, where the pressure is on. You know, if you're leading a school in this country, the pressure is on in terms of budget, in terms of accountability, in terms of staffing and retention and recruitment and all the things that you're demanded to be doing. When the pressure is on about the what of education, then I think much more attractive to the why of education, as Nigel said earlier. You know, so when I'm talking about wisdom or hope or community and dignity, it's not just a new strapline for your school, because you know, most schools have that already. But the way that we're talking about it and connecting it with day-to-day practice in terms of curriculum design or spending your budget or admissions or the challenges of rural school leadership, for example, you know, we're really creating a sense of, hey, this would actually be helpful, and this would be better. There's that quote that we often use about vision. Vision is a picture of the future that produces passion. And you know, none of us need another strapline to follow, but what we need is a moment where we go, hey, wow, I'd love to be part of that. That's what vision is. And really be imposed. It has to be kind of created among a community. And what we're finding is that because we're doing that in a way that's grounded very much both in biblical narrative, but also day-to-day school leadership questions, it's got an enormous amount of credibility and traction, because it offers a different way into approaching the demands and challenges of leading. I've been working with 20 school leaders in Manchester on curriculum design based on the vision. You know, some reflection on 2 Corinthians, we're delving into the biblical notion of hope. But ultimately what we're doing in the room is planning a science curriculum or planning a maths curriculum, you know, and it's beginning to see that that in itself is inherently a deeply Christian activity to be doing. You know, that's the central game of education, because it is through that we really get the, you know, the most sense of flourishing in, as Nigel said, in life and all its fullness. It's through that's offering that really attractive sense of it, but then a sense you can actually do something with it, you know, and I think that's where it's coming alive.
Can I ask a question too? Cause I get this real strong sense, and Andy, I've gotten it from you in the past, and Nigel, I get this really strong sense of this togetherness. We do this together. We do this work together, whether it's leadership or whether it's, you know, in our schools or with our schools, the idea of the networks that you've created so that people aren't doing this in isolation in their schools. I think I find that so much, that it's one of the biggest inhibitors to actually enjoying your work, is that, you know what, I'm in my school with the ground underneath my feet and just working. And you've given it a sense of life that this is something that we get to live out and get to do together. Nigel, who did you need to engage in these conversations? Religious leaders, political leaders, just other educational leaders, university leaders. How did you go about just engaging people in this larger conversation that says, hey, help us clarify and give us a picture for this and give us the language, or help us develop this language together?
Yeah, and that's a really good question, because it that doesn't happen overnight. And I think you're absolutely right that one of the things that I was hearing very early on when I started this role, as I went round to diocese after diocese, talking to groups of head teachers, and every diocese has kind of a conference with their 100 church school head teachers coming along, was a sense of isolationism, that there was a sense of, you know, we've got all these pressures that the world's throwing at us in terms of our budget or in terms of our accountability or in terms of the curriculum that we're having to buy, you know, and we feel like we're managing this on our own. And it was fascinating how every time I talked about the scale of the church's network in education, you know, most people just, you know, even those people who are working in a Church of England school, it was like scales falling from their eyes when they said, what you mean there are 4,700 of us all having this conversation? And it was turning it from a sense of I'm an individual in this on my own, fighting all these battles locally to run a good school, to actually I'm part of a movement for education, which at the very least has got 4,700 Church of England schools in it, but actually many more who you get a sense of wanting to share in that conversation themselves from non-church schools. And it was getting that sense of this is, you're part of something bigger, which was really key in getting the kind of the momentum going. And so we did that through talking to heads in groups of heads and to governors, but also at the diocesan level in terms of diocesan leadership in the education system. But you know, you're right to talk about some of the other key leaders. So getting the bishops of the Church of England enthused about this means that what we were giving them was the ability to be able to talk confidently about why they were so committed to education. And so having a sense of this is giving me the tools that I need to be able to speak confidently into the public square about the church's role in education was a really positive step. And that kind of grew out from there to, well, then actually when you talk to people in government, and I have, you know, regular conversations with the Secretary of State for Education and for other senior civil servants and ministers. And when they could see that actually what we were coming and talking about was not just a bit of religious education and collective worship, but a broad vision for the whole of education, I think they suddenly thought, well, actually, you've got something really interesting to say here. So, you know, they weren't able to put us into a box which was kind of specialist religious interest box, but knew that we were saying something really rich about the whole of the education, and particularly when we had a focus on character, which was something which, you know, developing the character of children and young people, which, you know, what government wouldn't want to do that? I think there was a recognition that we were talking the kind of language which they were interested in hearing, rather than talking our own kind of odd religious language. And that's, I think, what gave it the traction, is being able to say, look, we're at the heart of what we think education's about here, and we've got something to contribute into the whole system, and that's really appealing. So we end up then talking, you know, there's a piece of work which I've been involved in, which is looking across the sector about what does it mean to be an ethical leader? And whereas I think, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, we probably wouldn't have had a seat at that table, because people recognised that we were speaking with confidence about the church's role in education, you know, we were invited to those kinds of discussions as well. So we're back at the heart of you know, how the country is talking about education.
And Andy, the role of this togetherness, and you see it play out in these networks, like, how have you seen that, just the opportunity to bring, you know, like you said, 20 different leaders, teacher leaders together, you know, to have conversations, whether it's on curriculum development or one of these practices that you look at within, whether it be admissions or ethical leadership, like Nigel mentioned, like, how have you seen that just create new life and, or just even a better way of living out, you know, who we are as people, but then also as professionals?
Yeah. I mean, our experience in creating these networks is really based around, we talk around leaders who are called, connected, and committed. There's three kind of ways of describing leadership. And in our definition of connected leaders, say that leaders should operate deliberately within communities of practice, operate deliberately within communities of practice, and embrace interdependence. And you know, no school is genuinely isolated. They're all, you know, vaguely near. This is a pretty small island we live on. There's a lot of people here. You know, it's reasonably well connected. But to operate deliberately within a community of practice is a whole different ballgame, because you're acknowledging that the person, you know, the solution to your problem is probably held by somebody around the table. And that's different from trying to compete with the people around the table, which is really the sort of more prevalent dynamic in education discourse. You know, we're supposed to kind of outdo each other in our performance, and it's a zero sum game, because if I win, you lose. That's how that works out. And that isn't really the kind of economy of God's kingdom, is it? You know, we don't we don't compete with each other in that sense as we build that community. And so what we found is when you set up the right things that people are working on anyway, and then give them a new language and a new energy to kind of enhance what they're doing, rather than just make a different version of what they're doing. But you get that moment of, hey, this actually makes the thing we're working on, this makes it better. This would be great. Then we get that traction. And we've seen that on a local level. So, you know, today I've been working in Manchester in these rural schools conferences. They're on a slightly broader geographical sense, so spread over a wider region. I mean, it's all still pretty small compared to in the States in terms of geography. But then we brought together just 3 weeks ago, we brought together for the first time all the secondary schools nationally. That's all the high schools, all the Church of England high schools. The first time that's been done, as far as we can see in history, invited them all to the same party, essentially, and then talked about the importance of the vision and how this kind of idea of ethos enhancing outcomes. And a whole load of them have signed up straight away to be part of that network, because for the first time, they're given the opportunity to be part of that community nationally, which they really relish, because, you know, any great leader is looking for the best practice, but also looking what they can contribute as well as what they can get out of it. And I think that's something really important about our networks. We most school leaders will say, well, why would I be part of it? What can I get out of it? And that's a reasonable value for money question. But actually, a genuine network asks the question, what can I give into this, as well as what can I get out of it? And so that's the difference between running a network and a program, I guess. But what we've found is that it's grown quite rapidly from, you know, maybe over 100. There's now over 500 schools working with us across the network. So it's grown, you know, really, because it's a really, you know, it's a really attractive way to collaborate on this stuff. In that kind of sense of community of practice. And it's probably counter to the way that, at least in this country, the kind of marketization of education has created this kind of false dynamic where you're seeking to compete and seeking to outdo other people. And we do want to strive for excellence in all that we're doing. That's not compromising any of this, but I guess we're just saying that in working together, we're stronger together, you know, rather than competing against one another. And I think it does all come back to the all of this would be almost impossible without the common shared language of the vision. I mean, everyone would get that concept of networking and think that was basically a good thing. But ultimately, people, unless it's tangible enough, even if people think networking is a good idea, they won't stick to it unless there's a common language. That's true in any sector, but definitely in education where it's so busy.
Well, I think you hit so much of that idea is networking is so much in the business sense and the business terminology is I'm going to create my network. You know, I'm not going to be part of or a partner within a larger network that, you know, is you know, for your good is also my good. So there is this, you know, partnership idea that, you know, it is not that zero-sum game, or it's not just this is my network just for me and for me to take that advantage out of. So I, you know, I definitely appreciate that. Nigel, let me ask you one last question, because I'm taking up a ton of your time and I love it and I appreciate it. And I look forward to having you in the United States in San Antonio with us in a couple months. But really the question I want to ask you is, and Andy, I'm going to ask you a different question, but similar, is what, Nigel, what have you learned about leadership, and where have you been challenged in leadership yourself to grow and to develop new concepts of, you know what, in this position, this is what I learned that I really wasn't prepared to learn, you know, a couple of years ago, or I wasn't expecting to learn a few years ago.
I think, you know, hopefully all of us, you know, on the journey of growing as leaders are always willing to learn lessons. And I think that one of the things which I've learned and which I think our network is learning together in a new way is that this sense of being connected, this sense of shared leadership means it's not all about me. And we've tended to have a model of leadership within education, which is very much kind of built around the superhero model of leadership, where it's all about one person doing an amazing job and they go in and they turn a school around and it's fantastic. And everyone says, what a fantastic leader you are. And actually, what real leadership is about how you create and enable others to step up as leaders as well, and how you release them, how you get them to be partners, how you get that kind of shared ownership about leadership. And so I think the thing that I've been learning over this journey is the kind of leadership which we need in the education system. Actually, it's pretty much the kind of leadership you need in any flourishing organization, is one where people get a sense of ownership about the vision, which means that they see themselves as home team, part of the leadership of this endeavor. They don't see themselves as someone who you're doing something to or trying to persuade to do something. And it's getting that sense of, well, we're Episcopalians, so it's kind of Episcopate is the kind of shared leadership of oversight. It's about how you get that sense of working with others in partnership to build a network, to build a whole system that says we're in this together. And we've done that by being really clear about what our why is, and getting people to sign up to be part of that journey, rather than asking people to be superheroes. And I think, you know, that's so important. It's why at the heart of our vision, we've got, you know, a section on hope and aspiration, which is about how you deal with failure. You know, because we want people to know how to fail well and to grow out of that, and to see the kind of the ability to grow through things that are challenging and through things that go wrong. And that's, again, part of getting away from the kind of we must all be superheroes and show how fantastic we are on our own, and get that both the vulnerability but also the partnership and the collaboration that come from working together and saying we're all on the same team, we're in this together, and it's my contribution as much as your contribution that will, you know, enable the whole fleet to rise in the tide.
So Andy, let me ask you just a variation on that, because I think, you know, you and I have talked about school leadership and in your time even as a teacher leader in that role. Like, what's something that through this process and working with the networks that you've learned that it's like, you know what, I wish I would have known this when I was, you know, actively in leadership in a school?
I think one of the most encouraging things that I'm learning is that our Christian narrative offers a genuinely attractive vision for education. I don't mean particularly the Church of England's way of articulating its vision at this point in time, but I think we can be a bit overcautious in being proud of that and being positive about that. We can be over apologetic. I think Nigel and I both find ourselves in conversations frequently with people who don't necessarily share our same faith position themselves, but are really attracted to what we're doing. Like, a really simple example of that is our work that we're doing around resilience at the moment. I'm frequently leading sessions where speaking passionately and authentically, directly from Paul's second letter to the Corinthians about the hopeful vision for resilience that he offers in that letter. And regardless of people's own position on their own personal faith journey, this is an attractive way of looking at things. It's not, we don't need to be kind of shy about it. And I think all, for all that our vision is enabling us to connect in the main game of education, it's really doing that because we're offering a really authentic vision of the Christian life. You know, it's not a, you know, our calling as Christians isn't to be on the sidelines, it's to be in the main game. You know, if we were running a hospital, if we were running a accountancy firm or running a cleaning business or a cafe, you know, it'd be just as important to be living out our calling in this really authentic way. So I think my encouragement is that I haven't yet experienced a moment where I felt, goodness, I was a bit too bold. You know, I think that's that's an encouragement for all of us, really, to not be sort of dogmatic and impose our own ideas on people, because that's irritating. But to be respectful and in dialogue, but to recognise that, yeah, actually, what we're offering is attractive, and in a world, and particularly as you will know from your reading of the international news, you know, our country has got a few key questions it's trying to resolve at the moment. You know, it's not all straightforward. I mean, you perhaps could say the same about your country as well. But at this moment, being confident in the way we talk about our faith is, you know, I think it's welcomed. And I think, you know, we shouldn't shy away from that.
Nigel, Andy, I want to thank you so much for your time. And I get super excited to spend a few days with you in San Antonio in a couple months.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to being over there with you as well. Can't wait.
It's going to be great.